Stay tuned for another exciting story about American veterans as told by the veterans themselves and hosted by Randy Baxter, the host of The Veteran Next Door.
NOX is proud to present The Veteran Next Door. Here's your host, Randall Baxter.
You listen to The Veteran Next Door, and I'm your host, Randy Baxter. Our topic today is early World War II and all the way through World War II, but I have something I want to read you first. It came from an excerpt from a book that I was looking through. Thought you might need to hear it. And here it goes. What then shall we Christians do with this damned rejected race of Jews? Since they live among us and we know about their lying and blasphemy and cursing, we cannot tolerate them. In this way, we cannot quench the inextinguishable fire of divine rage. And we can't convert the Jews. We must prayerfully and reverentially practice a merciful severity. Setting fire to their synagogues and schools, and covering over what will not burn with earth so that no man will ever see a stone or cinder of them again. Breaking and destroying their houses. So they have to live in stalls like gypsies and learn that they are not the lords of our land as they boast and must live in misery and captivity. Depriving them of their holy books, silencing their teachers, forbidding them the right to travel or to trade, and seizing their wealth on the grounds that everything that they possess they have robbed and stolen from us by their usury. Well, that sounds just like a bunch of Nazis, doesn't it? Well, this quote was in the year 1543 by a man that we all learned in our history books, and his name was Martin Luther. So as time has gone on, the Jewish people have been persecuted by different people all over Europe, all over the world, the Middle East, sometimes even in America. And our story today is about how that affected the life of a two-year-old girl at the start of World War II. You're listening to The Veteran Next Door. I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and we'll be right back.
Veteran Next Door will return in a moment here on 100.3 WNOX.
Sun up on a cool, sweet morning. Sausage frying in the pan. Make that sausage always Wamplers. It's the finest in the land. Wamplers, Wamplers, it's great sausage made on the farm in Tennessee. Don't say sausage, just say Wamplers, for the best in quality. Make that sausage always Wamplers, it's the best in quality.
Now back to The Veteran Next Door on 100.3 WNOX.
Welcome back to The Veteran Next Door. I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and my guest today is Miss Sonia Dubois. And boy, does she have a story to tell us today.
Let's do this. Tell me about this picture right here. What is this?
It's probably around 1946. Yeah. This is Sonia with my foster parents, William and Elizabeth Vanderkaden.
Now tell me why you needed foster parents.
When I was less than 2 years old, living in the Netherlands, my parents were deported to Westerbork at first, which was a holding camp in Holland.
What year?
They left in 1942. I was born in October 1940. I tell you that it took a long time for me to begin to talk about it. And my focus now is to talk to as many students as possible. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that the program will help me do that.
Well, when you said your parents were deported, what happened to them?
They eventually, well, that same year, ended up in Auschwitz and became 2 out of 6 million that were killed, yeah.
Really?
You know, I used to say lost. Mm-hmm. There's no such thing. They were killed. And so were my aunts and uncles, my grandparents. I'm the only one left.
Really? And your grandparents?
And my cousins. How did I get away?
Yeah, well,
it was a miracle. My parents, I'll never know if they, you know, thought about this for a long time or made an on-the-spot decision to leave me behind. There was a friend of Daddy's who was also an artist. I didn't find out that connection until 1999, 2000 actually. They decided to leave me behind, which has had to be the greatest sacrifice in Rotterdam as they got on the train. Mm-hmm. On the train.
So they had the choice.
While they were at the train station, they had the choice. I don't know if it was, you know, smuggled or what the situation was, except before they got to Westerbork, which then became their jail until they ended up in Auschwitz. It was in the Netherlands. It is in the Netherlands. Uh-huh. It's a place that I did visit. It's at the northeast border, not far from Germany. From Westerbork, the philosophy was, as I understand it now, that they would gather as many people in one family and then deport them all together. What I know is that all my relatives died, except one, died in Auschwitz, and my paternal grandmother ended up in Sobibor. You know, that was a killing camp.
Yeah.
Everybody knew that. In Westerbork, there was still, Auschwitz, there was still, it was a concentration camp, so folks were chosen to go to the right or to the left. Mm-hmm. And I have been reading for years now about what happened in that camp. And it's hard to say, to understand probably, but I hope for an early death.
For your parents?
That they came and were sent to the left, which meant they were going to the gas chambers.
You know it was sent to the left meant the gas chambers?
I'm sorry?
Do you know for a fact that it was the left or right?
Yes. At Westerbork, they told me we could identify, we found the train they went on. You know, they kept unbelievable records.
Oh, yeah, meticulous records.
And I am told that that whole train, none of those people lived. So
how did you wind up with these parents?
I was given to a good friend of Daddy's. He was quite a well-known actor. He was a well-known painter in Holland.
This guy?
No. he was single, took me home to his sister and brother where he lived all his life. From there, he found an underground connection. An underground's underground, I still don't know which agency I ended up in that eventually contacted mom and pop. See, I have two sets of parents, mother and daddy, mm-hmm. They're the ones that gave me up, mm-hmm. and mom and pop. Who risked their lives to keep me safe. I'm known as a hidden child, except I wasn't hidden in a closet. I was way out in the open all my life. Mm-hmm. And when things got too hot, when people asked questions that they couldn't or wouldn't answer, mm-hmm. we just moved to the other end of town. Now, imagine that happening today. Mm-hmm. Here we are, east side of Knoxville. Could you move to Corinth and get lost? Mm-mm. Not a chance. Mm-mm. But the lack of communication, not everybody had telephones. Cell phones, of course, were not even dreamed of yet. So that's what helped keep me safe. We moved three times in those 3 years.
So who would be asking questions? Somebody would they think
all
that you
all
were...
All the Nazi soldiers that were in. Look at the color of my hair. Mm-hmm. And I went to a preschool class where I'm sitting in the front row, my first school picture, the only brunette. People were asking questions everywhere.
Sonia Dubois was one of the lucky children during this era. Listen to what some of the other children had to do just to survive.
We went up to them, and it was a manhole, and they were taking their turns and leaping in. There were no steps. It was deep down. We didn't hesitate for a fraction of a second. We knew that this was a possibility of life, whereas what we were leaving behind was a certain death, certainly for me.
In the hall was terrible. It's like being buried alive. I was in that hall for about 9 months.
He took me through those small tunnels that we have to crawl, and he took me to a place that I could see the light, daylight.
Sonny Dubois' real name was Clara Van Tyn. She was born on October 19, 1940, but she celebrated her birthday in August because that was the day that she became the child of Willen and Elizabeth Vanderkaden. Sonia's mission in life, and also the mission of the Hidden Child Foundation, was to educate all people about the consequences of bigotry and hatred so that never again will anyone suffer the atrocity, the injustice, and the agony of the Holocaust. From 1939 to 1945, all Jewish children in Nazi-occupied countries were hunted and threatened with death. To survive, they had to go into hiding or keep their true identity secret. Many were left to fend for themselves, wandering in search of food and shelter. They hid in the convents, the orphanages, the barns, the woods, the basements. And yeah, just like you just heard, they even lived in the sewers. You're listening to The Veteran Next Door. I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and we'll be right back.
The Veteran Next Door will return in a moment here on 100.3 WNOX.
You're listening to The Veteran Next Door Radio, hosted by Randall Baxter. Be sure to check out theveterannextdoor.com to shop online for episodes of The Veteran Next Door, information on veterans' benefits, or to find you or your family's military records.
Hello, this is Randy Baxter, the host of The Veteran Next Door Radio program. I'm also an advocate for U.S. senior vets. This next announcement is important to our listeners who have a parent or spouse who have served at least one day in the U.S. military during wartime. If this is you, please pay attention to this next announcement.
Do you have a grandparent, a parent, an aunt, an uncle, a sibling, a spouse who is a veteran of our armed forces and represented our country during wartime? The Aid in Attendance benefit is a little-known Veterans Administration benefit offered to our heroes who fought in our wars. This benefit is also available to spouses of these same veterans. You must qualify for this benefit by submitting an application by meeting the criteria for qualification. For free information helping you find out if you qualify for this benefit, call 865-525-2323. You will receive the basic information to qualify for this benefit, as well as the next step procedures for application. Not all veterans qualify, but you need to be sure that you know what this benefit is all about so you will know when that time comes. Many family members may be suffering from the wear and tear and expense of providing services and care to a loved one who qualifies for this economic support. Take the first step. There is no cost to you to find out. Get your free information in the mail. Call 865-525-2323. There is no cost for this information. Just call and you will receive it in the mail. No salesman will call. World War II, Korean, and Vietnam veterans, and even our veterans from the Middle Eastern wars can qualify, but not if you don't take the first step. 525-2323. This service is provided by the sponsors of the Veteran Next Door radio show and is not working in association with the Veterans Administration. This service is free to all veterans.
Energize, detoxify, and hydrate six times faster with Hydrate Alkaline Ionized Water. Hydrate is available at the Veteran Next Door store at 4812 Asheville Highway and also available at your local Knoxville area Walgreens. Bottled at the source in Dandridge, Tennessee, this natural spring water and effective antioxidant reduces acid waste, hydrates cells quickly, and tastes delicious. Hydrate is a veteran-owned business and a proud sponsor of the Veteran Next Door. For more information about Hydrate Alkaline Ionized Water and the benefits it provides, visit www.historicsprings.com. That's historicsprings.com. Try it today.
Statements not evaluated by the FDA, nor meant to replace your doctor.
January 28th through February 1st, the Tennessee Veterans Business Association presents the 3rd Annual Business and Education Showcase at the Knoxville Convention Center. This is a one-of-a-kind, high-energy, dual-purpose event, a trade show, and hiring expo. Our expo combines all the aspects of TVBA into one high-energy, fantastic event. As a business, showcase your products or services, engage in business-to-business networking, find teaming partners and subcontractors, and great breakout sessions. And don't miss our Veteran Career Opportunity Fair. Bring a sales or human resources person to speak with potential candidates. Enjoy great keynote speakers like Jim Haslam and Charlie P. Tombers Jr., both Army veterans. So whether you're a veteran or a business, you can't miss out on this great opportunity. That's the 3rd Annual Business and Education Showcase, January 28th through February 1st at the Knoxville Convention Center. Presented by the Tennessee Veterans Business Association.
Now back to The Veteran Next Door on 100.3 WNOX.
Well, tell me more about the hidden children.
It's a group of youngsters that their parents made the ultimate sacrifice by giving them away instead of taking care of them, thinking that they could keep them safe.
So they gave them away to Gentile families or to non-Jewish families?
There were a lot of orphanages, Catholic hiding places. I have a friend or two that survived that way. There were a lot of older children, older when I'm saying 8, 9, 10 years old, who roamed the streets, who lived in sewers. I mean, there are terrible stories. That's why my life was glorious in comparison to them. I lived with one family the whole time. Mm-hmm. My parents didn't come back. They were killed. And they kept me as their own. In 1946, when a relative was married to a Christian and stayed safe, came to find me, all this information came out. What my true name was, mm-hmm. when I was born.
When were you born?
October 19, 1940. But... My birthday celebration during the war was in August, because that's when I came to Mom and Pop.
Wow.
Figuring it was a new life for them. They wanted a child very badly, didn't have any of their own, never did. And it was life for me. There was no way I was going to survive had I been taken to Auschwitz. And for a long time, I didn't consider myself a survivor, because life was good. I have a lot of emotional scars because Mom and Pop chose to hide my identity from me even after the war.
That was to protect you.
During the war, yes. It became such, you know, such a habit. Why would I want to know anything about my heritage? Why? Because we all do.
Well, of course you do when you're older, but if you're 6 or 7 years old...
No, that was dangerous for them to do that.
Well, yeah, and it would have just...
blown the whole
thing. Well, it would have hurt who you were. It would have hurt your personal identity as a child.
Right. Oh, I don't blame anybody for that. Yeah. That's just... It just took me until 1999 to find out that, yes, I do have a relative.
Oh.
Now, this was really
1999?
Very important. 1999. My distant cousin called, and here we have modern communication that made this happen.
Uh-huh.
Answering machine. Twice she left.
Gosh.
Yeah, twice she left a message. I think we may be cousins. Well, sure, you are. Didn't leave a telephone number, which was fine. She knew that I wasn't going to return a call. There have been so many hoaxes, anyhow. So the third time, sure enough, we connected.
Uh-huh.
And we talked, and after about 5 minutes, I knew that, yes, she was.
How'd you know?
She knew about an oddity. Daddy had a missing ear shell.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd seen one picture only of them ever. And that came just before we came to the States. We didn't talk about that yet. But as a youngster, when I look at that picture, that's all I saw. This man with the strange ear, and these were my parents. And
your father had a strange ear?
Yeah. Which makes me hopeful in the fact that they were sent to the left, because
he had a defect.
Germany, absolutely, absolutely correct, because he had a defect. We talked about, you know, pictures, and I only had seen a picture of Daddy at that time. And so she came and flew to Knoxville, picked her up at the airport, and sat and talked for the weekend, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the following year, my husband and I went to see her family. And the amazing thing happened. I spoke to the only person ever I've spoken to that knew Daddy as a person. You know, he's been a name on a piece of paper. I'm the only proof that he existed.
You know, listening to Sonia Dubois talk takes me back to the start of the show when I told you about the way people were feeling back in 1543 about the Jewish people. And then we went forward 400 years and found out that the Nazis were persecuting the Jews and all their families and were killing these children and hunting them down just because they were Jewish. And then here we go another 70 years later, and we find that one of those children that had been persecuted in World War II finally runs into a great aunt and makes a connection to the only person who actually knew who her father. And when they're talking on the phone, she hears the recent bombing in Tel Aviv in December of 2012. This family has been persecuted because they were Jewish for over 500 years. You're listening to The Veteran Next Door. I'm your host, Randy Baxter. We'll be right back.
The Veteran Next Door will return in a moment here on 100.3 WNOX.
Are you a veteran? Or maybe your parents or grandparents were? Go to theveterannextdoor.com. That's theveterannextdoor.com for access to past military records, information on the aid and attendance benefit, or to order past copies of the show. That's theveterannextdoor.com. That's theveterannextdoor.com. Check it out. You'll be glad you did.
In a world of rising medical costs and shrinking retirement accounts, many vets are concerned about preserving their precious assets, and some are struggling to provide for the basic personal care they need at a time in their lives when they need it the most. Fortunately, as thanks from a grateful nation, our government created the Non-Service-Connected Disability Pension with aid and attendance. It provides qualified veterans and their surviving spouses with a tax-free monthly pension to help defray the cost of long-term care for those who need in-home care, assisted living, or skilled nursing care.
To find out if you qualify, visit theveterannextdoor.com and click the Veterans Benefits button. Watch the short movie brought to you by the U.S. Senior Vets about the Aid and Attendance Program and sign up to receive more information. That's theveterannextdoor.com.
The Veteran Next Door is not a government agency and not affiliated with the Department of Veteran Affairs.
Randy Baxter, the host of The Veteran Next Door, is available to speak to your civic group, organization, your church, your school, or any group interested in the American veteran and what non-veterans can do to support them. Topics will include great stories from the Army, Marines, Air Force, and Navy, personal stories about our veterans, and ways to interview your personal veteran while you still can. Now, if you're looking for a dynamic speaker and a heartwarming desire to preserve our heritage and the heritage of all veterans, contact Randy Baxter to schedule your group's event. Call 865-525-2323 or contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com or visit theveterannextdoor.com, our website, to get more information. Put Randy Baxter on your calendar today. Randy Baxter, the host of The Veteran Next Door, now available for your speaking engagement.
January 28th through February 1st, the Tennessee Veterans Business Association presents the 3rd Annual Business and Education Showcase at the Knoxville Convention Center. This is a one-of-a-kind, high-energy, dual-purpose event, a trade show and hiring expo. Our expo combines all the aspects of TVBA into one high-energy, fantastic event. As a business, showcase your products or services, engage in business-to-business networking, find teaming partners and subcontractors, and great breakout sessions. And don't miss our Veteran Career Opportunity Fair. Bring a sales or human resources person to speak with potential candidates. Enjoy great keynote speakers like Jim Haslam and Charlie P. Tombers Jr. Both Army veterans. So whether you're a veteran or a business, you can't miss out on this great opportunity. That's the 3rd Annual Business and Education Showcase, January 28th through February 1st at the Knoxville Convention Center, presented by the Tennessee Veterans Business Association.
Now back to the Veteran Next Door on 100.3 WNOX.
Welcome back to the Veteran Next Door. Can you imagine being given away to another set of parents when you were 2 years old and not remembering anything about your original parents or why they would give you away? Knowing that as a child, the very fact that if you saw men marching with black boots, it would get you at a point where you would never want to wear black boots again. And then later on in your life, after you're full grown, learn the story, and then have a phone call come in where somebody said, "Hey, I think I'm a relative of yours, and I think I have something that you're going to want to see." And when that person comes, you make friends with them and you see all the bonds, and then they show you a picture. Listen in and see what happens.
Isn't that fantastic?
So that's the first picture you'd ever seen.
Yes. It's grandfather too much for me to get it lightened. I tried. Took it to Photoshop's.
I bet that just gave you chills, didn't it?
You notice where it is? It's in my purse.
Uh-huh.
I tell the students that I teach or that I speak with that, you know, they all know by the time they're about 12 years old who they look like. Mm-hmm. Grandparents pull out the picture in the uh-huh. store to show their friends, uh-huh. and their friend says, "Oh, he looks just like
yeah.
his mother or his
yeah.
brother."
Mm-hmm.
All my life, I wondered
who
I look like. And, you know, when I first got the picture,
mm-hmm.
I didn't see it. This is just before they married. So they're only 28 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to look at pictures myself when mm-hmm. I was about 38, 40.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I saw different things. It's not like this one.
And this was in 2000 when you got this? When did you first see this?
When was I? 60? I'm 72 now. Yeah.
And someone had, who had this picture? Or that
it was in the movie.
Oh.
And when they stopped every frame, we ended up being able to get that picture. I carry it with me all the time.
You need to seal
everywhere.
It up. We need to get you to seal it up better.
Oh, I change it all the time. This thing gets dirty. I have others. I mean, I have copies of it. This
one. Oh, okay.
Yeah. This is the...
That's just one you carry.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a bigger one at home. And I have this little shrine in my living room. That's what we call it. It has this picture. It has a picture of my cousins and myself. There's another one that was found in Canada,
mm-hmm.
Leo, and a picture of all of us.
So here you go, 60-year-old female living in the United States, finds out that there is a movie, a film of a wedding in the Netherlands in the late 1930s. And that someone has gone through that film, frame by frame, and found a picture of Sonia Dubois' parents to give to her as a gift. And she had never seen a picture of her parents before. She's been through a lot. And, you know, she's got a mission in life. And I think it's time where we stopped right now. And let's listen to that mission.
And the Holocaust the fact that it happened is unknown to a lot of this generation.
Even denied.
Even denied. The reason that I'm really anxious to speak to as many students as possible, time's marching on. Mm-hmm. And soon it will only be in history books, maybe, mm-hmm. and documentations and film. But you can't talk and get answers from those situations. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to Chattanooga on Monday. Mm-hmm. And I challenge the kids to ask me questions. This is a real person. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, I'm 72. There are a couple of folks in Knoxville who have numbers on their arms. They're too old to go out and talk. Kids under six didn't have to have their arms tattooed in camps because they hung out with their mothers and they figured, you know, get them one way or the other.
Yeah.
But do please let people know that presentations are still available. Email me. You know, that look at how we met. Mm-hmm. You know, you mm-hmm. just never know when there's an opportunity
to share
that racism is not dead.
Do you have a phone number that you want to provide, or you want to email?
Email.
What is that email?
Ron Son, RONSON. Etnology.
KNOLOGY.com.
Net.
Ms. Dubois travels around East Tennessee and wherever she can go, and especially into schools, middle schools. So if you're out there and you want an excellent speaker to come to your school and talk to the children about her experiences as a child and during World War II, you can contact her by email, and that is ronson@etnology.net. RONSON @KNOLOGY.net. You can send her a brief email and she'll open up the conversation. And maybe if you're out there listening and want to share her experiences, you can make that contact and get it on your calendar. You know, all the children were hiding in the sewers and Sonia was hiding out in the open trying to pretend like she was a little Christian child. And eventually the war came to an end. Let's listen to Sonia's story about that.
And yes, I remember liberation.
Tell me about that.
I don't know why a 5-year-old is taken out in the pitch dark at night with all these people singing, making noise, flying their flags. You know, flags were confiscated with a lot of other things that Dutch people were robbed of. Radios, of course. No communication between people. This was May 5th, 1945. And it was after dark. And I had no idea why I was out there in Pop's arms. But they took me out just like everybody else was out celebrating them. Liberation. Now, we were liberated at first by Canadians. And the story I like to tell is how they drove with their huge tanks through the streets and threw out goodies. Lucky Strikes, I'll never forget. Those little white packages with the red circle on it. Mm-hmm. Cigarettes for the guys, or women, who knows. Also, Hershey bars. But my very favorite was bazooka bubble gum.
Really?
I ate more bazooka bubble gum. You want to know. Because those kids collected those little comics, right?
Yep.
And the odor of bubble gum is despicable to me.
It is?
Yeah.
Because of that?
Yeah. I had my fill, plus, when the grandchildren were small and they used that bubblegum toothpaste, I was not happy.
Oh my gosh.
But, you know, if it wasn't for those soldiers Who knows how many more than 6 million? And they're like 6 million more that weren't Jews.
Yeah, how many? How old was your pop at that time? You know, on Liberation Day. Yeah, yeah.
About 40.
Did they bring you to America, or did you come?
Yes. I lived with them all my life. Mom only died maybe about 4 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
And she was here in Knoxville?
Johnson City. And after Pop died, we brought her closer. And she was in a...
2008 is when she died?
Yes.
And how old was he when he died?
He was also in his 80s.
When did he die?
12 years before that.
Hearing Miss Dubois tell her story about her parents makes me remember that not only are our veterans from World War II passing away at just a phenomenal rate every day, so are the parents and the civilians and the people who were affected by all the things that happened in World War II. You know, and sometimes those things even cause memories today.
Mostly smells that bring me back to... kerosene will give me instant headache. When we did have food, it was prepared on a little kerosene stove. Oh, no, and I was never hungry. Lots of people in Holland were very put upon. They were hungry. They had nothing. They traded in their valuables to go to farmers and try to get some food. But here again, underground connections that Pop had provided me with a hot meal every day. I went to an aunt and uncle. You know, everybody's aunt and uncle in Holland. I would not be Miss Sonia. I would be Aunt Sonia, whether it was a relation or not. Mm-hmm. Just a form of being addressed. And I went to an aunt and an uncle who fed me a hot meal every day. And when I came home, Pop had saved me my portion of soup from the soup kitchen. Would you believe that?
And I did believe that.
Yeah.
So you all lived poor?
The reason we had a soup kitchen is that, yes, there were food stamps, but there was no food to trade for. So cities opened, they were hungry. They opened soup kitchens. People had nothing to eat. People ate tulip bulbs and died from the potential gas that's in there. They suffered horribly. I will never forget the first time that we had lovely white bread. Today, I still think of that as being better than today's pound cake. We still had our blackout curtain, so it had to be like probably right after the war. Packages fell from heaven. That's how you see it as a kid. They were parachutes. Mm-hmm. The Swedes, it was Swedish white bread and butter. Amazingly good. You know, Sweden is the only country who protected their Jews.
How could this inhumanity to other human beings have happened? You know, the lesson here is I don't think it happened overnight. Sonia has a great lesson here.
You know, Sweden is the only country who protected their Jews, that did not bow to the Nazi occupation. And they send packages of bread and butter.
By plane?
By plane. That wasn't little parachutes.
Okay, but was it a Swedish plane or was it a...
I don't know.
Really?
I was a little girl. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. It was the package that was important, not where it came from. But I remember that we still had the blackout curtains. And we each person had a half loaf of bread and butter, and put so much butter on it that you could see your teeth sink into it. Oh, that was heavenly. As I say, I wasn't hungry, but I'm sure I didn't have treats either. It's a small country. People say, well, why didn't they stand up and defend themselves?
Well, I know exactly why. Let me see if I can answer. One, you had no geography to stop tanks, and it would have been total destruction if you had defended yourself. There was, you know, the safest thing to do was to not defend yourself and set up an underground.
There were many, many camps. As you probably know, by having spoken to soldiers that were there, they were mere children, of course, when they were young soldiers, but they were liberated a lot of camps. I want to mention that in every country that the Nazi occupied, they did not work alone. Everywhere they had collaborators. And the danger is that people didn't start out to be collaborators. Much like today, we are indifferent to what's happening around us. And the indifference turned to silent bystanders. And from there, they helped the enemy. And it was, you know, it was subtle initially. All laws were changed against Jews. I mean, I remember going to the beach after the war. That's where we used to vacation.
In the Netherlands at the beach?
Yeah. And at the little steps going down, they had a sign that said, no dogs, no Jews.
We want to thank Sonia Dubois for being our guest today. Let me tell you how lucky and how fortunate we are to have her here today. When World War II began in September 1939, there were approximately 1.6 million Jewish children living in the territories that the German armies or their allies would occupy. When the war in Europe ended in May of 1945, more than 1 million, and perhaps as many as 1.5 million Jewish children were dead. Liberation from the Nazi tyranny brought no end to the sufferings of the few Jewish children who survived. Many would face the future without parents, grandparents, or siblings. They spent their lives knowing that at any moment they could make a mistake that would cost them their life. They had to live through the hardships of starvation and constant fear and being rejected by the community. They lived under false paperwork, and they were always looking for good hiding places and new religions that they could disguise themselves under. And, you know, Sonia's story has made me think of lots of things that I have learned since I started this show. It made me understand why a man whose dad would call him a sissy would get in a wooden airplane and land and go fight the German soldiers. It made me realize why somebody from Jefferson City, or actually in Oak Ridge and wound up living in Jefferson City, would ride down in one of those planes as an assault soldier, knowing that when he got out, the men who were killing those children, or representing the men who were killing those children, were there to fight them. It made me realize that 19-year-old boys from East Tennessee were going to go into Europe and fight across the snow and watch their buddies get killed, knowing that their mission was to liberate these families and these children, and how some of the men from East Tennessee would be captured at the Battle of the Bulge and march through the snow and the cold. and how others would cross rivers in little canvas boats using their gun butts as paddles, charging into German machine guns just to get to the other side. It's always the children that really get hurt the most in the wars, especially over time. It's been the Jewish children in Europe. And Sonia Dubois' story, from the age of 2 to the time of being 60 years old and finally seeing the first pictures of her parents and learning that there were still people alive who knew her parents as human beings and not just a piece of paper or a memory. You listen to The Veteran Next Door. This is your host, Randy Baxter, and we'll talk to you next week.
I never was a soldier, but I played one as a child. History was good to me. I grew up free and wild.
You've been listening to Randall Baxter and the Veteran Next Door. Be sure to join us again next Sunday morning at 9 here on 100.3 WNOX.